I did prepare something. It's not usually, I was very busy this week preparing other things as well. I've got youth camp coming up, so I was spending a lot of time preparing a lot of other stuff. So I kind of, I don't want to say I rushed this together, but I put it together as quickly as I could. So hopefully it all makes sense, and hopefully it all comes out well. So I was a little pressed for time, but I got something that I want to share with you. I had a listen to a commentary on the 23rd Psalm about a week ago, and I said, you know what, I never thought of the Psalm in this way. I'd learned some things, and so I'm going to hopefully teach you guys a few things and talk about the 23rd Psalm today. So we'll just start off by reading it, right? And the 23rd Psalm, I'm sure this is something you guys have all heard, you all know. There might probably be, if you have a Bible, a break in the Bible, so to speak, where it's opened up to that portion, you know, where people go and refer to this often. It's a very, very popular psalm. You see it on a lot of Christian, memorabilia, if you will, or, you know, things at the, you know, cross-stitched on pillows and whatnot and motivational posters. You see this all over the place, you know. And it's incredibly popular. People know this psalm. People that aren't followers of Christ know this psalm. You hear about it in pop culture, and you hear it in people's songs. Usually it's referring to the shadow of death or something like that, but they kind of misapply what that means. And so I kind of want to take a breakdown today of the 23rd Psalm. So we'll read it. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil, my cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Now, it's a very uplifting and very comforting psalm. And when you look at the sort of the poetic side of it, you know, there's three statements that, you know, the psalmist is David. He's the one who wrote this. And so he makes three statements that with the word I shall not want, I will fear no evil, I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. So those are three things that David is telling everyone. from a personal standpoint. Then you go into the he statements. Now, he makes me to lie down. And he's telling someone, he's telling the audience, telling you, you know, this is what the Lord does for me. He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness. So he's telling everyone out in the audience, hey, this is what the Lord does for me. And then there's the thou statements, where he's talking to God. It's thou art with me. Thou preparest a table before me. Where he speaks to God. This is all focused on God, but it's from three, you know, sort of three different directions, I guess, if you will, you know. I, he, and thou. So when you kind of look at that, you can kind of like break that down a little bit. It's one of the commentaries I read, you know, how the different ways in which he's communicating how God works and what he does. You know, we love the 23rd Psalm. People love it. We all love it. Is there anybody here that doesn't like it? I don't see any hands. Okay, I didn't think so. Everybody loves the 23rd Psalm. Why do we love it? And we love the idea of a God who provides. Do we not? Not being in want. There's a phrase, I'm probably going to butcher it, a statement says, you know, that wealth is not found in great possessions, it's found in having few wants. It's something to that effect. And that's true. You know, if you don't want anything, you don't have a need for anything, you can feel very like you are well provided for. You don't have to necessarily have great possessions, but if you don't have any wants, you're doing very well. And we like that idea. God is going to keep us from want. Keep us from wanting things. We love the idea of God takes us to peaceful places. Green pastures, still waters. He provides for our needs. Provides the things that we need, our homes, our cars, our jobs, our sustenance. We live in we're in this building now. It's nice and air conditioned. You know, this is a nice place to be. And we like the idea that God's going to take us to peaceful places and care for our needs. We love the idea of God gives peace, restores my soul, that I can be recharged, I can come in on Sundays, I can go to my scriptures, that I can go to prayer, and He can restore my soul. He can give me hope and give me courage, bolster me in my time of need. We love that feeling, a feeling of peace. I love the idea of a God who protects us. You know, He's with me, walks with me. He's right here. See those bumper stickers, you know, God is my co-pilot, right? He is with me. He's here. And we like that idea. And we like this idea of a God who guides us, who gives us direction. His rod and His staff that correct us. Let us know when we're going in a danger zone. Let us know, hey, we need to go this way. These are the things that need you. We love this idea of God who guides and corrects. The idea of God feeding us, not being fed. Little typo there. But being fed in the presence of my enemies. You know, no matter what's going on around me, I'm going to be taken care of. God's going to take care of me. No matter who is against me, God's going to take care of me. We like this idea. I like this idea. It's a great feeling, a great sentiment. Love the idea that God is going to bless us. So much that my cup's running over. Oil is anointed on my head. And we like that. And we like this idea, you know, God who invites us in to His presence. He's going to dwell in the house of the Lord forever. We love that. I love that. I want that. Who doesn't want all of these things? You know, that's why this psalm speaks to so many people. It speaks to the things that, you know, they're precious. They're desirous. Tastes good. Feels good. Looks good. But you know, this psalm isn't a statement about God's general treatment of people. Because a lot of people take it that way. This is what God does. This is what He is. You know, but that's not what David was trying to say. And first, we have to understand it, that it is written in a series. This is written in context. You know, it is not a standalone psalm. It is preceded by Psalm 22. How many people know Psalm 22? I don't see any hands go up. You know, it's not a pleasant psalm. In Psalm 22, it talks about Christ. And it talks about Christ's sacrifice. In Psalm 22, it starts off, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? Why art thou so far from helping me and from the words of my roaring? You know, this is, when you look at it and you read it out through, you realize very quickly this is predicting the crucifixion of Christ. And He cried that out on the cross. Why have you forsaken me? You know, 1,000 years before it took place. Oh my God, I cry in the daytime, but thou hearest not. In the night season, and am not silent. I'm crying out to you constantly, and I don't hear you. You're not there. You have forsaken me. And this is not the one that brings us great hope. That's not the feeling I want to feel of being abandoned. Crying out, God, where are you? But I am warned, no man, a reproach of men, despised of the people. And they all see me, laugh me to scorn. They shoot out the lip, they shake the head, saying, he trusted on the Lord that he would deliver him. Let him deliver him, seeing he delighted in him. And that's one of the things they accused him of on the cross. You're the Son of God, or so you say. And they laughed at him. And they mocked him. Now, if you're the Son of God, then you'll be saved, won't you? It goes on. Verse 15, my strength is dried up like a potsherd. My tongue cleaveth to my jaws. Thou hast brought me into the dust of death. You know what? Referring to when he was on the cross and he was asking for drink. Thirsty. Give me something to drink. They part my garments among them, and they cast lots on my vesture. You know, this is all what had to happen. Psalm 22 had to take place in order for us to be able to enjoy Psalm 23. What's more, it's followed by Psalm 24. Who knows Psalm 24? No hands again. Psalm 24 comes after, and it tells us, all right, you know, there is an expectation. Who shall ascend into the hill of the Lord? Or who shall stand in his holy place? Who gets Psalm 23? Who can have this? He that hath clean hands and a pure heart, who hath not lifted up his soul into vanity, nor sworn deceitfully. He shall receive the blessing from the Lord and righteousness from the God of his salvation. This is the generation of them that seek him, that seek thy face, O Jacob. Lift up your heads, O ye gates, and be lift up, ye everlasting doors. The King of glory shall come in. Who is the King of glory? The Lord strong and mighty. The Lord mighty in battle. You know, this is the expectation. You have to have a clean heart, clean hands. You must seek the Lord. You must seek his face. This is not something, you know, Psalm 23 isn't just a blanket statement that goes out to everybody and everyone can have and partake. It first had to be a sacrifice so that it could happen. Next, those that come and seek him, then our God will fight for you. He'll fight the fight that needs to be made to save your soul. Mosiah, in the 11th chapter, verse 128. He that will hear my voice shall be my sheep, and him shall ye receive in the church, and him will I also receive. And we have to listen. You know, he calls to all, but not everyone listens, do they? Not everyone answers. And if you don't answer the call, you don't listen and seek his face and seek him out, you don't get Psalm 23. You can't claim it. It's not yours. Because God requires something. He requires to know you. You know, because the shepherd knows his sheep. You know, the sheep are found all throughout Scripture. When you look all throughout the Bible and in the Book of Mormon, there are shepherds that are mentioned, there are sheep that are mentioned. All throughout. It's a common theme. Look at some of these. Moses, after he left Egypt, after he murdered an Egyptian, he left. And where did he go? He went to Midian. And he spent 40 years in the desert being a shepherd. Spent 40 years chasing sheep, leading them from one place to another. Caring for them, giving aid to them, making sure they were taken care of, making sure they were protected. You know, it was probably in preparation for the job that he had to do, because then he came back and he had to lead Israel. And what did he do? He shepherded them another 40 years in the desert. You know, it's a job. It takes a lot of work. You know, it's not a high-status job, being a shepherd, dealing with sheep. Now, it's a low-status job. And it wasn't looked on highly, especially the Egyptians. The Egyptians didn't look on shepherds as being, you know, the cream of the crop. They were the people that lived out in the dirt, lived out with the animals. They smelled because they carried these sheep all over the place. Had to take care of them in the birthing season. Had to shear them. It was a messy, dirty job. Took a lot of patience. You look at King David. He was a shepherd when he was anointed king. You know, they brought in all his other brothers. Said, these are the strong ones. These are the best that I have. I'm like, no, there's one other. All right, well, I got my youngest. He's a shepherd. And he comes in, and this dirty little boy says, this is the one. The lowest. Because he's learned how to be humble. He's learned how to care. He's learned how to be tough. How to be strong. In our Book of Mormon, when Ammon goes to the Lamanites, seeking to turn them, convert them to the gospel, let them know, he comes into King Limhi, and King Limhi gives him a job. You're going to be the shepherd. And you think about that, what had been happening was all those evil men had come and scattered the king's flock, and the king was killing all the shepherds. So what do you think the king was doing? He's like, ah, okay, I know how to get rid of you. I'm going to give you the lowest job I got. And you're probably going to get killed. Jesus identifies himself. John chapter 10, 11 verse. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd giveth his life for the sheep. But he that is a hireling, and not the shepherd, whose own sheep are not, seeth the wolf coming, and leaveth the sheep, and fleeth. And the wolf catcheth them, and scattereth the sheep. The hireling fleeth, because he is a hireling, and careth not for the sheep. I am the good shepherd, and I know my sheep, and am known of mine. That's something about sheep and shepherds. You know, sheep are led. They follow the shepherd. You know, cattle are driven. You got to push cattle. You drive cattle. But sheep are led. So the shepherd has to know them, and he has to call to them and speak to them. And the sheep know his voice. He has this relationship. The shepherd has a relationship with his flock. They know him and are known of him. Christ. And these others, you know, they knew their flock. They called to them. They had a relationship to them. Now, that's the nature of shepherds. It's down and dirty work. Nobody else wants to do it. You're off by yourself with these sheep. You know, and sheep are not the brightest of animals. They have a lot of problems. One, they are utterly helpless. You know, they've been domesticated for so long, they don't have any defenses anymore. They don't have any sharp teeth. They don't have any venom. They don't have any claws. They don't have any talons. No fangs. They don't have anything. They're defenseless. The only thing they can do is panic. When the wolf comes and they say, all right, every sheep for himself, and they take off and hope that they're not the one. That's all they got. Matter of fact, they'll fall over because they get so much wool on them and they can't get up, like this sheep here. It's fallen over. It can't get up. It's stuck and it can't help itself up. Can't even roll over. So the shepherds, what do they have to do? Got to go out there and roll them back. And then they got to watch them because they're disoriented now. They got to wait for them to catch their bearings, and then they can walk along and they can go catch up with the herd. But if it wasn't for the shepherd, the sheep, they get stuck in fences. They get stuck in ditches. There's a video on YouTube I'll watch when I was getting ready for this. The sheep, it was stuck in a ditch, and these guys come over, they pull it out, and the sheep takes off running, and it jumps, and it lands right back in the ditch again. And that's what sheep do. They're just in panic mode. I gotta go. And if they don't have a shepherd to take care of them, they don't have a shepherd to come by and shear their wool, they'll fall over, get stuck. You know, this is not the greatest animal to be referred to when God talks about his people. He calls us children and he calls us sheep. It's not the most resounding compliment that I've ever received, be called a sheep. And so why? Why is it? It's because we're powerless. Now, Satan and his demons, they have absolute power over us. We can do nothing to defend ourselves. It's impossible. In and of ourselves, we can't do it. It cannot be done. Satan has a plan. He knows you. He knows you. And he's got a plan for you. He knows your family. He knows your past. Because he's watching you like a predator. And know where they're going. And we can't stop it. But not to worry. Not to worry, the good shepherd. He's in control. I know this. We have stories. If you look in our Bible, Matthew in the 8th chapter, Mark in the 5th chapter, and Luke in the 8th chapter. Jesus comes across the sea, and in one story, it's one man who is possessed. The other ones, it's two men that come out, and they're possessed of demons. They're owned, taken over. They could not fight this battle, and they succumbed to this possession. And Christ steps off the boat, and these demons cry out, "Why are you here? Don't torment me." Because they understand, they know they cannot fight him and win. They have lost already. And at a word, he says, "Go." And those demons flee. And they're gone. They end up in this herd of pigs. This herd of pigs jumps off a cliff, and they all drown. Because they can't. They can't stand in his presence. They can't be where he is. Because they know his power. They know what he's about. They believe in him. So when you say, David says, "The Lord is my shepherd." What he's saying, he's making a statement. I have a relationship. I hear his voice. I follow him. Not everybody can say that. Well, ask the question, can you say that? I hope the answer is yes. But not everyone can say, "The Lord is my shepherd. I have a relationship. I speak to him. He speaks to me through his holy word, through his servants on earth, through his influence, and through his Holy Spirit." Do you have a relationship? Can you stay? "The Lord is my shepherd." Look in 1 Nephi, in the 2nd chapter, and 65th verse. "And I saw numberless concourses of people, many of whom were pressing forward, that they might obtain the path which led unto the tree which I stood." Nephi is having this vision, this dream. He's tasted of this tree, and it tastes good. And he's calling his brothers. He wants everyone to know. And he sees all these people in this portion of the dream. They're coming to the tree. They see the good. They see Psalm 23, and they want this. "And it came to pass that it come forth and commenced in the path which led to the tree." They understand, like, I know what I want. I see the good thing. It's there. "And it came to pass there arose a mist of darkness, yea, even an exceeding great mist of darkness, insomuch that they which had commenced in the path did lose their way, that they wandered off and were lost." You know, they saw the good. They saw Psalm 23. I like that. I want that. When Satan came in, clouded things. Temptation comes in, diverts our attention. And they lost sight. They lost their way. They can't say, "The Lord is my shepherd." Good news, though. It can go both ways. In Ephesians, the 2nd chapter, the 1st verse, "And you hath he quickened, who were dead in trespasses and sins, Wherein in time past ye walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of power of the air, the spirit that now worketh in the children of disobedience, among whom also we all had our conversation in times past in the lusts of our flesh, fulfilling desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature the children of wrath, even as others. You know, we can all be called out, but we have to listen. We have to have that relationship. We have to listen to the voice of God calling. Doesn't matter how many sins we've committed. Doesn't matter how many trespasses. You know, it says you were dead. You were dead to the world, inside it. And he brought life. You listened to this, the prince of the air, Satan, who is the prince of this world. He listened to him. You were his children. But you heard the call. So we can come out. We can come out of the mist. We just have to listen to the call. Listen to his voice. And develop that relationship. The shepherd knows his sheep and his sheep know him. But God, who is rich in mercy, for his great love wherewith he loved us, even when we were dead in sins, hath quickened us together with Christ. By grace ye are saved, and hath raised us up together, and made us to sit together in heavenly places in Christ Jesus. It goes both ways. He can call us out. And we have this thing, this wonderful thing called grace, mercy, patience, and long-suffering. That's what a shepherd has, is patience and mercy. Because the sheep keep jumping in the ditch, and they keep falling over and over. And I get pulled out of the fence. And you got to help them give birth. And you got to do all these things over and over and over. And Christ, the shepherd, is willing to be patient. He's willing to extend his grace. But you got to know his voice. To hear him, listen. So you can claim Christ is your shepherd. When you believe that you are a sinner. And he died for your sin. You can claim Christ as your shepherd when you ask for forgiveness. And you repent of your sin. You can claim Christ as your shepherd when you obey his commandments. Now, these are the things that are needed to claim that Christ, that God, the Lord, is my shepherd. You can't just make that statement. You can't read that so lightly. You can't put it up on your bumper sticker or up in your house in a picture and not have. If you're not doing these things, you cannot claim those words. Because it's not for everyone. It's for his sheep. Those who listen to his voice. Next part of this leads me to pasture, to water. He's going to take care of our physical. He knows our needs. He knows everything we need before we need it. You got Alma in 16, verse 220. Cry unto him over the crops of your fields, that ye may prosper in them. Cry over the flocks of your fields, that they may increase. Matthew chapter 6, verse 8. Be not therefore like unto them, for your Father knoweth what things ye have need of before ye ask of him. And then he tells us in the Lord's Prayer, verse 11, give us this day our daily bread. You know, we're to ask for these things. It's not wrong to ask for the things that we need, but he knows we need them, and he can provide. He can take care of the physical things. Take care of us and give us the jobs that we need. Give us the clothing that we need. Sometimes it can be kind of frustrating. You think you need something, and we don't get it. Maybe you didn't need it. Maybe it was something that God said, nope, you don't need that. I'm going to take care of your needs. Yeah, as it says, his eye is on the sparrow. He numbers the hairs of our head. He knows what you are in need of. He knows everything. So ask for what you need. He can provide. He restores my soul. And he watches over us and our soul. He watches over our welfare. Something that he is keenly aware of. This temporary life, you know, we have a soul that's going to last for all eternity, so he's going to take care. If we are his sheep, if we listen to his voice. 2 Nephi, first chapter, I don't have the verse on. Oh, it's verse, yeah, I don't have the verse on there. My apologies. But behold, the Lord hath redeemed my soul from hell. I have beheld his glory, and I am encircled about and eternally in the arms of his love. You know, this he watches, he cares about you. He wants to wrap you in the arms of his love. He wants to hold you. That joy that Joel spoke of this morning that Christ feels, this is what he wants to pass on. We've got to listen to his voice. Come when he calls. Go where he leads. He cares for your soul. 1 Peter 5, verse 6. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time, casting all your care upon him, for he careth for you. He cares. He doesn't want you to feel alone. He doesn't want you to feel by yourself. He doesn't want you to feel lost and alone. He cares for you. He wants you to know he's there. Fear no evil. 1 Peter 5:8. Continuation of what we just read. Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary the devil as a roaring lion walketh about seeking whom he may devour. You know, there are dangerous things in this world. There's dangerous things spiritually. There's dangerous things physically. There's dangers out there. There are predators that are lurking, that are waiting to destroy. Satan has pull. He has sway over the hearts of many. One of the things that shepherds do, you know, they have to lead their flocks. You know, they got to lead from pasture to pasture. They got to lead to water. Having been out and, you know, out hunting and out where the cattle are, you know, and animals, they follow these trails. Go to one spot to another. Where do you think those predators are? Think they're at the water? Think they're at the pasture? When you watch those shows on nature shows, you know, those lions, they're hiding. They're hiding on the path because they know those animals are in transit. They're moving. They're focused on something else. That's my chance. I can leap out. And there are places, you know, but if God is our shepherd, we don't need to fear. 3 Nephi 8:51. For Satan desireth to have you, that he may sift you as wheat. Therefore you must always pray unto the Father in my name. Whatsoever ye ask of the Father in my name, which is right, believing that ye shall receive, behold, it shall be given unto you. You know, again, we have to ask. We have to have this relationship, this communication between us and the shepherd. Speaking to him often. You know, I can't do it alone. I keep falling in the ditch. Keep getting stuck in the fence. I keep falling over. And I can't get up. I've got to be talking. Speaking. And there's this aspect to this, you know, that people get afraid. They do. They're fearful. They're fearful of what men may do. They're fearful of what men may think. And it's a hard thing to overcome. Sometimes the people have power over you. You might lose something. You know, think about some of these men that have come before us, some of the prophets, the priests. You know, think about Abinadi. Who did he really fear? Did he fear men? Did he fear evil? I think he feared God. You think about Peter. You know, our history tells us he was crucified. You know, did he fear men? Did he fear evil? No, I think he feared God. So there's this sliding scale, you know, the more you fear God, the less do you fear men. I was with my daughter the other day, and we were, the teacher had to drive. She just got her license this week. I was going through, and I told her to drive me to the store up here. So we get to the store, and we get out in the parking lot, and we're walking through the parking lot, and, you know, I don't know if you guys have noticed it, but it seems like there's a lot more homeless people about now than there used to be. Big city we're living in, it's kind of one of the things that comes with big city living. And some of these homeless people, they look kind of scary. My daughter made the comment, I'm always afraid coming here, I'm afraid I'm going to get mugged. I said, sweetheart, I'm the most dangerous man in this parking lot. And if someone tries to harm you, I'm the most dangerous man in 10 miles. Because you're mine. You're in my flock. I'm shepherding for you. I protect you. It's my job. I don't fear what men may do. Because the Lord is my shepherd. And if he's going to take care of me, I'm going to take care of his. So fear no evil. Now he prepares a table in the presence of my enemies. You know, this is not, Psalm 23 is not a, hey, you're going to have a good life and everything's going to be okay. That's not what it's saying. There are people that are going to stand against us. Satan has sway. There are people that are not going to like us. There are people that want to end Christianity. Get rid of it. Get out of our government. Get it out of our cities. Get it out of our lives. Actively seeking to destroy. So what does it look like to have a table prepared in the presence of your enemies? What is God thinking? What is he doing? What does this mean? You know, we have this example. The land of Goshen. You know where Goshen's at? It's in Egypt. When Joseph had come and he'd been given charge over Egypt, and his family came in, he says, I want you to tell them that you're shepherds. So they put you in Goshen. And that's where they were. For 400 years, they were held. Like I said, the Egyptians looked down on shepherds, and they were looking down on these people. And when Moses finally came back, and all these things were happening, God was showing all these wondrous acts, these plagues, these things that he was doing, chipping away at all the gods of Egypt to show that he was God. And Pharaoh was, No matter what, I'm not letting you go. You're not free to leave. Here's Israel. They have no army. They are surrounded by their enemies. So at the end, what does God tell them to do? You sacrifice a lamb. You're going to spread its blood. You're going to sit down. And you're going to eat. You're going to eat. Surrounded by your enemies. You're going to eat. And the destroyer is going to come. And he's going to pass by. Because you are my people. You're my sheep. So sit down. For the Lord will pass through to smite the Egyptians. And when he seeth the blood upon the lintel and upon the two side posts, the Lord will pass over the door. And will not suffer the destroyer to come into your house to smite you. That's what it looks like to eat in the presence of your enemies. Christ did the same. Matthew 26 verse. They sit in for the Passover meal, the same meal. And Christ's enemies were surrounding. They were plotting. And what does he do? And as they were eating, Jesus took bread and blessed it and broke it, gave it to the disciples and said, "Take, this is my body." He took a cup and gave thanks, gave it to them saying, "Drink ye all. Sit, eat, drink. I'm here." The enemies are out there. They seek to destroy. Sit, eat, and drink. That's what that looks like. Is that everything out there is against us, and yet we can sit down in the presence of God. We can eat. We can drink. And there's this promise. In the last verse, the shepherd's promise. We go to John 14th chapter, 15th verse. "If you love me, keep my commandments. And I will pray the Father, and he shall give you another comforter, that he may abide with you forever. Even the Spirit of truth, whom the world cannot receive, because it seeth him not, neither knoweth him. But ye know him, for he dwelleth in you, and shall be in you." I will not leave you comfortless. I will come to you. I'm going to dwell in the house of the Lord. He's going to come and dwell in you. You keep his commandments. If you keep your hands clean, he will come and will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. You know, that's what the 23rd Psalm is all about. You know, it's not just feel good. You know, this is a statement. It has promise. It has expectation. So, I'm going to ask you all to participate, and I want us to read together the 23rd Psalm, and I want you to think, you know, about what we talked about what it means to say that the Lord is my shepherd. All right, ready? Come with me. "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever." So I hope that you can all leave here today with this statement on your heart, knowing what it takes, knowing what it means, that the Lord is my shepherd. Thank you for your time.